Let's go back in time to 1932 as Converse brings you historic footage of the legendary original Celtics with whom all great professional teams are compared.
We have now taken over your radio.
Richie Guerin is about to show you the most important step in getting past a man. It's the first one.
And Oscar will inbound it. The men in green, the Milwaukee Bucks, that's Al Cinder against Bellamy.
Has Jordan. Allen shakes free. Gets two!
Gilmore on a big step!
Oh,
brother! Lead Toledo artist. You get 21.
4:28 to go in the first quarter for the Cal Palace. Here's Barry.
Jordan. Open. Chicago with the lead!
Hello and welcome back to the Over and Back Classic NBA podcast. I am Jason Mann, and with me as always is Rich Craich. Rich, great to be back with you.
Absolutely.
And we are continuing our top 50 series, looking back at the greatest players in NBA history and trying to decide who might join that list. And today we are talking about someone who, you know, does sometimes people have opinions about him and his worth on the internet. It is Allen Iverson.
Yes, a very polarizing figure in a lot of ways. Yeah, it's an interesting one. I'm looking forward to this guy.
Yes.
see how to unravel this very odd career of Allen Iverson.
Yes, and both of us have actually recently read the new book by Kent Babb, Not a Game, which is about his career. So we're gonna talk a little bit about the book toward the end of the podcast. But first, we'll get into his top 50 case. He is 83rd all-time in win shares, 210th in win shares per 48. He is 78th in block score plus minus and 39th in value of replacement player. And we can maybe get into this a little bit more, but it does surprise me that he does better on the latter metrics, which, you know, my understanding is those take in, you know, those take defense a little bit more in, you know, and he's not necessarily repeated as much of a defender, even though he was able to kind of get steals and stuff. But he was kind of the type of defender who obviously was small and, you know, kind of gambled a lot and lost on that one. So it surprised me that he did so well on those metrics.
I was a little surprised as well. Real quickly, maybe I'll do these real quick before we get into a lot of the other analysis of his career.
Sure.
But looking at error position and position all time. So this is obviously guards, as we've done on this podcast, as guards and then in the time that he played. Sixth in win shares, 42nd in win shares, 48. And like you said, fifth in value of replacement player. So we actually graded out real well amongst guards in his era. And then position all time, so guards all time, 25th in win shares, 80th in win shares per 48, and then again, 14th in value over replacement players. So yeah, if you look at a lot of the box score plus minus and that sort of stuff, they really enjoy it. They like his defense a lot, which is unique. I you know, there's not a lot of times where I've thought that box score plus minus was, you know, against sort of the narrative of a guy that, you know, good at defense, bad at, you know, offense, you know, that sort of stuff. It almost seems to fall in line a lot of times with guys, you know, not necessarily breaking it down, you know, minute number by number or whatever, but in terms of like overall thoughts of a guy, I feel like, oh yeah, okay, they think he's a good defender, I think he's a good defender. But this is the one that was kind of odd. They graded him out really well, so maybe he was better than we thought. I don't know.
Yeah, man, it's a mystery, but I think there's enough that we know about Iverson. I think we can get a kind of a good sense of where he lasts, although he just is a hard guy to read in a lot of respects. Mm-hmm. As well, I mean, that's kind of, and that's sort of one of the themes of the book, which we'll get into. But the rest of his resume, he is a one-time MVP, three times on the All-NBA first team, three times on the second team, one time on the third team. He is seventh all-time in points per game, eighth all-time in steals per game, and fourth all-time in usage rate. He has three top 10 seasons in win shares, although actually was 10th all three times, and two seasons in the top 10 in value over replacement player. In the Bill Simmons Book of Basketball Pyramid, he is ranked 37th, and in Slam Magazine's Top 500, he is 40th. And, you know, he was just an incredible shot creator, scorer, lots of quickness, and just had really incredible workload. He led the NBA in minutes seven times in a 10-year span, and during eight playoff runs, he averaged 45.1 minutes. So I think one of the things for Iverson for me is just the what he just the load that he took on offense and the value of shouldering that load. What does that kind of mean in of itself?
Yeah, I think that's the important thing with Iverson as well. And I think one of the great things as well is that, you know, I usually don't like to look at just, you know, one simple year or, you know, getting to the NBA Finals is like a measure of one player or whatever. But I always look at that 2001 Sixers year and look at what he was able to do with a team that overall, I mean, it was an okay team, especially when they added Mutombo. It got a lot better. But it really, when you look at it on paper, there are guys that are basically there to let Iverson sort of do what he wants to do and accentuate him. And that's I think, one of the best single examples, you know, at least in the past 30 years, of a guy, like a single guy, just putting a team on his back and getting them to a certain level. I mean, of course, once they faced the Lakers, they were absolutely no match for the Lakers or whatever. And of course, he was in, you know, a somewhat of a weaker Eastern Conference, and there's all these little caveats here and there, but he's just always a guy that I look at and I go, my God. And then it wasn't just that year, though. I mean, the Sixers' success, you know, almost single-handedly hinged on him, you know, being what he was and being a great scorer and being, you know, Allen Iverson and shouldering, like you said, that gigantic workload that we just don't see. I mean, you look at his usage numbers and you look at the minutes per game and you look at those sort of things, and it's just unbelievable how much this guy played and how much he was that offense. Like, everything that happened on offense went through him. And then to think that Larry Brown was coaching the team that did that is also a, you know, fun little caveat as well. But yeah, that's his value right there. It's just a guy that single-handedly got teams to where they were going to get to. And that's, there's value in that, I think.
Yeah. And, you know, I think the example, you know, the reason in the 2015 finals of how the Cavs basically were forced to play with LeBron just dominating the ball.
Yeah.
And, you know, and being, and taking that role of creating everything and all doing all the scoring and basically, you know, because he had teammates that really weren't able to do that. And also I imagine part of that was to take the burden off of them so that they could defend on the other end and, you know, and just, you know, keeping them, you know, even though LeBron was very inefficient during that series, and it was amazing performance just because of the load that he had to carry and the ability of LeBron to kind of keep them in that series when they had no business, really. You know, they were clearly the weaker team with all the injuries and stuff. But I think that was, there's an argument, and I think I do buy it, that was kind of the way they had to play in order to do that. And I think there's a certain argument that, you know, at least with the 0-1 Sixers, that they were kind of built that way. And, you know, and they built very much in a way where they, you know, the other guys did all the defense and you know, rebounding and all the stuff that Iverson really didn't do. And he was just there to, you know, and he was there to score. And it worked, you know, pretty well for a while. You know, and they had some other pretty good teams during that time as well. And even though there was a lot of turmoil during that time and, you know, and Iverson and Larry Brown were butting heads, I mean, it certainly had a thing. I mean, you know, you can certainly argue how effective Iverson actually was, but what you can't really argue is just what a force he was, both on the court, and we even talked about this, but this is really important too for him, is just the level of influence and of fame that he had, you know, during the time, and just how he was able to shape the image of the NBA, I guess, both for better and for worse. But he really just had inspired, you know, a generation of players. And you know, and it's certainly, it's hard to write a history of the game without him being part of it.
Exactly. And that's the thing that I mentioned on a previous podcast we did. And of course, that was one of the biggest criteria that we had for this. So not one of the biggest, but one of the criteria we had for this was influence and just cultural significance and all that sort of stuff. And, you know, influence in the game. And Iverson is a guy that, yeah, it seems so weird. And so I don't know if it's necessarily wrong, but just seems odd that you would have, you know, a 50 greatest player of all time or a top 50 list or whatever, and not list a guy who was without a doubt the face of the NBA for a handful of years. I mean, he was no doubt the face of the NBA, again, for better or for worse, and really influenced the game in a lot of different ways in terms of the style it was played, in terms of some rule changes, in terms of, you know, fashion, and in terms of, you know, rules and stuff that they had to do. It's so unique of what he was able to do in a relatively short amount of time as well, because the real Iverson explosion, he was in the league for a few years before it really became, oh my God, this guy is, you know, the top guy, or just a really a culturally significant guy. It took a few years to get that. And then it was all kind of over in a flash as well. So it's so weird to kind of think of him and try to put his career into sort of a capsule, because it's such an interesting career. It's just so weird that, you know, it's one of the highest highs, and it never really got a low, but it just sort of ended. You know, it's you get a few, you know, the Memphis years, that's probably a low, or that last, you know, Sixers year or whatever. But it was like over and done. Like, he went from, you know, averaging 30, 26, and then like 19, 14, and then he was done. And it was like, oh, okay. Like, we didn't get that slow drop. We didn't get to see Iverson off the bench. We didn't get to see Iverson as the fourth best player on a team or the third best player on a team or anything like that. It was like, you know, budding superstar, you know, disgruntled superstar, and done, and it's over. And it's in that sense, it's so hard to kind of put his career into a pocket and a bubble and try to think of what it really meant. I struggle with it, but the cultural impact is huge. And I, you know, even if the statistics aren't all the way there, I like you said, it seems weird to write the history of the NBA in any way of its 50, you know, greatest players and not feature that guy in there. It's hard.
Yeah. And I guess, you know, really the best way to sort of compare him is to guys, you know, who are in, you know, incredibly high usage players, and to see kind of where he stacks. I think it's the fairest, at least numbers way, to kind of get the sense of that. But obviously with him and with anyone, but especially with him, it's more than just the numbers.
Absolutely. And unfortunately with him, when you look at those high, like you mentioned, the high usage guys, what I did is I did a quick little thing here, because we talked about this off air, of sort of looking at it. And I looked at players with 30 plus career usage percentage. So these are guys, you know, very, very high usage percentage guys, over 100 games in their career as well. And then looked at the win shares per 48 and kind of ranked them. I don't have the exact number. I lost the list here and I don't feel like doing it right now, but there was about 18 guys on this list. There are a lot of the names you would think of, a few little sleeper guys, like a George Gervin was in there as well. A few guys like that. But overall, Iverson was actually third to last in terms of these guys in win shares per 48. The only guys that were worse were DeMarcus Cousins, you know, obviously currently of the Sacramento Kings, and then Freeman Williams. This is the first, I believe, Freeman Williams mentioned we've ever had on this podcast. And that's it. Those are your two guys that are worse in win shares per 48 with 30 plus usage percentage. So even amongst those guys, Iverson doesn't really stand out. But, you know, as I said, it's a very limited list of guys with over 30%, you know, career usage. So he's a tricky one, Allen Iverson. I don't know.
Yeah, for sure. So, yeah, I mean, he's definitely a contender for our list. I mean, you know, we're clear on that, even though, yeah, the numbers, you know, some of them don't look great. Some of them look better. He's definitely someone we'll consider. It's hard to say where he'll end up. I think there's a chance he'll be on there, but it's hard to argue. But so do you want to talk about the book a little bit?
Yeah, let's talk about the book a little. I just about done with it. I know you have finished it. It's a unique book in the sense that when I initially got it, you think you're going to basically read, and it states as such, you're going to read sort of the biography of Allen Iverson. It's not, you know, obviously an autobiography, but just sort of written from the third person of Kent Babb, who goes through his career, goes through his life and all that sort of stuff. Quickly, though, you kind of realize the book is sort of half and half, and the way the chapters are sort of broken down is one half is like current Allen Iverson and like what's going on in his life, and in terms of it's not good, by the way. It's a lot of it is bad in terms of like divorce, you know, issues with alcohol, issues with his family, that sort of stuff. And then they'll go to the basketball, and it's sort of this you know, juxtaposition of his you know, his current life and his basketball playing life. And then eventually towards the end, they start to, you know, cross a little bit more and start becoming a little bit more of a cross section of what his life is like and what his career was like. And as they both sort of, you know, fell downward at the same time. But me overall, I always prefer a book that's just about the basketball. But then I realized that when you do a book about Allen Iverson, it's kind of a disservice to not talk about his life, because he's a guy who, you know, is a very polarizing figure on and off the court. I mean, a lot of his superstardom that we talked about before was not necessarily what he was necessarily doing on the court, but how he presented himself, how he looked, you know, the company he kept, you know, how he got to the arena, you know, how he practiced, all that sort of stuff, his relationship with players and coaches or whatever. So I feel like it's disingenuous to not talk about his personal life, but it feels like this one is a lot about the every other chapter being, you know, personal life, career, it kind of drags on you a little bit towards the end. I feel like it, I don't know if you feel the same.
Yeah, I do agree. Yeah, and the bulk of that is from documents from his divorce, which I think was in 2011 or 2012.
Yes,
so
yeah.
So it'd be basically, I mean, it's getting things from that. I mean, Kent Babb has plenty of interviews too. Although I guess I would have liked to have heard more from like the players that he played with at the time. And
yeah, it's really only like Aaron McKee and George Lynch are the only two guys he seemed to ever.
We get Larry Brown, like, and you get like the guys who were around him, like at Reebok, who were part of the, who kind of helped market him and kind of changed his, or, you know, kind of formed the image that we expect or helped form that. They embraced it when a lot of companies would have been more conservative and not wanting, you know, him to have cornrows and tattoos and, you know, and have that appeal, but they definitely embraced it. So we get some of that. We get some of the people that were close to him. And it's sort of, a lot of it is about like how fewer and fewer people are, kind of in his inner circle anymore, because part of it's because he doesn't have money. Part of it is because, you know, there's been alienating, with those guys. I do feel like I certainly think that the stuff that is in there should be in there for the most part. But I do feel like there's so much focus on the fall of Allen Iverson that I feel like we didn't really get a lot about. We got some about the rise, but I just feel like the stardom, the actual like stuff they did on the court, what made him a special player, we get a lot about the conflict of Iverson and Larry Brown, but I just feel like the actual stuff that kind of made him special as a player and how he kind of related to the team. And, you know, we know he was late a lot. We know he drank a lot, learned from this book that, and maybe, a lot of stuff's already kind of maybe out there on the, in the public record, and the point of the book is bringing a lot of the new stuff. And, I certainly feel like it does capture him, but I mean, he's a guy who I just really think it's hard both on the, both on the court and off the court in terms of personality. He is just such a hard guy to kind of capture because there's so many facets of him. There's so many, it seems like he's, just a really kind, sweet guy sometimes. And he's just a terrible guy to deal with because of alcohol, and just terrible to his family, and he just acted in all these terrible ways. The basketball part of him is hard to define, and the personal with him is hard to define.
Yeah, and I echo your thoughts, again, about in terms of the book and the sort of difference between, how much he talks about him playing and how much he talks about his life or whatever. And I absolutely get it. And I think that it'll be an interesting read for anybody that's a basketball fan, and anybody that's not a basketball fan too. I think you get a good idea of kind of the ups and downs of this guy's life and that sort of stuff. But yeah, when you talk about some of the year, like that 2001 finals year is basically in one chapter, and that's like, oh man, like you gotta, that deserves a lot more. I mean, that's just such an interesting, interesting year. And it's built up in terms of a few chapters prior about the Larry Brown and Allen Iverson, at each other's throats, and Iverson's, on the trade block, famously, ready to go, and Matt Geiger, blocks the trade or whatever. But I felt like, that eventual year where he sort of, in a lot of ways, figured it out, and Larry Brown just said, screw it, I don't care, like, do your thing, let's see what we can do, and let's see what we can do with this. I thought that needed a little bit more, but I guess, that's how I read it. But I'm sure there's plenty of people who would get bored by, hearing about that sort of stuff. So that's whatever. And like you said, I think one of the big parts is that not doing enough interviews with other players, and that might have been, I'm sure he tried. I don't know for a fact, but I'm sure he contacted guys. Maybe a bunch of guys just said, I don't really care. I don't really give it, AI, I don't really talk to him anymore. I don't know what he did. I don't want to get involved in it or whatever. It could have been that, but it was pretty, I mean, you basically heard from Aaron McKee, George Lynch, and a few other dudes, and it would have been real nice to, because, he played with a bunch of different guys, a bunch of different stops in his career, that sort of stuff. But yeah, it's overall, I would recommend it, I think. I think it's a decent book. It's an easy read. I think that's the biggest thing too. I blow through that. I'll do a sitting, and I'll go through my maybe 100 pages in one sitting, because it's a very, very easy read. And maybe that's sort of a testament to the switch off in there in terms of like basketball personal, is that you can get through it really quick, and you sort of want to get to the next chapter always in a way too, because you're always like, okay, what's next in this personal life stuff, because you just continue to see it spiral and spiral and spiral, and you're like, oh, how can it get any worse, what's going to be next, what's behind this door or whatever. So it's interesting in that respect. But yeah, if you're going in for like a pure Allen Iverson the basketball player book, you're not going to get that. And if you're looking for like a pure like puff piece on Allen Iverson, it's not that as well. It's he's got warts, but I feel like Kent's fair in that too, because he also represents the times when he is a good guy as well. But
I don't have an issue with the, you know, the balance of it. I think the balance of it seems, you know, appropriate based on what it has. Just, yeah, I would have liked to kind of, you know, gotten a more of a sense of kind of what made him special, you know, in terms of basketball and in terms of the way that he captured people. And you get a little bit of it, but I guess I would have liked a little bit more of that stuff. And but I accept that, you know, given what he had to work with, given that he tried to get Iverson to talk to him and was unable to. Yeah, I mean, Iverson's voice, I guess, is really the key thing that's missing from the book. And, you know, and he admits late in the book that, you know, if he'd been able to get that, it would have been a stronger book. Toward the end, he talks about trying to get Iverson and approaching him and, you know, and that kind of thing. But yes, it is. It's still an interesting read. It's still a good book. I do recommend it. But there are some, you know, some things to know going in for sure. So, everyone, please check us out at hardwoodparoxysm.com. We are part of the HP network of podcasts, which you can find both the HP network feed and our own feed on iTunes. We would appreciate if you'd subscribe and give a rating and review. And you can also find us at over and back at NBA.com. It's our message board where you can chat about all the players in the top 50 or whatever great NBA topics you want to talk about. And we've had some great discussion there from some contributors. We really appreciate that. And you can find us on Twitter and Facebook at over and back NBA. And you can also subscribe to our new newsletter, the over and back NBA history newsletter, which we're going to be having every week. It'll just have articles and podcasts and things that are going on in NBA history that have appeared on the internet that you want to know about. So you can get that from us. So until next time, thanks for listening, and we'll be back again soon.